Today is Thursday, September 3rd, and this is International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Coming up, reactions to the U.S. government sanctioning top officials of the International Criminal Court.
This is a retreat into the idea that, you know, war crimes are only war crimes when they're committed by other people.
Also ahead, German Chancellor Angela Merkel accuses Russia of poisoning a leading dissident. Plus, Ethiopian officials demand an explanation from the U.S. after it announced it would cut aid over a Nile River dam. These stories and more are next. Our top story today, German Chancellor Angela Merkel on Wednesday accused Russia's government of attempting to assassinate Russian dissident Alexei Navalny with a nerve agent.
Alexei Navalny wurde Opfer eines Angriffs mit einem...
Merkel says that Navalny was the victim of an attack with a chemical nerve agent of the Novichok group and that the poison could be identified in tests. She said it is clear that Navalny is the victim of a crime and he was supposed to be silenced. Merkel also says she and the entire German government condemned the attack, quote, in the strongest possible terms, end quote. Navalny, 44, is an outspoken opponent of Russian President Vladimir Putin and has specialized in investigations into official corruption. He was airlifted to Germany last month after collapsing on a domestic Russian flight after drinking a cup of tea that his allies said was poisoned. Navalny is the latest in a string of opposition figures allegedly poisoned by the Russian government in recent years. On Thursday, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said Moscow rejected any suggestion that Russia had been behind the attack on Navalny. Peskov says others should be careful talking about accusations against Russia. He says there are no grounds to accuse the Russian state and that Russia is not inclined to accept any accusations in this respect. He also says the Russian Prosecutor General's office sent a request for mutual legal assistance to Berlin. Peskov says Germany received the request but has not replied. Peskov claims that no traces of poison had been found by Russian doctors before Navalny was airlifted to Berlin. Merkel said Germany is informing European Union and NATO partners about the test results. She said they will deliberate and, depending on the Russian reaction, will decide a common response. A spokesman for British Prime Minister Boris Johnson said Russia must explain what happened to Navalny. For more on the Navalny poisoning, earlier today I spoke to VOA Russia Service's Danila Galparovich in Washington. Now, first, can you explain who is Navalny and why does the Russian government apparently view him as such a threat?
Alexei Navalny rise on Russian political arena something about 12 years ago. And initially, he was just a member of Democratic Party Yabloko. Then he decided to pursue his own political career, and he chosen the way rather unusual in the Russian political environment. He gave up basic demands of civic rights or something, and he started to press on corruption and started to make very loud investigations about inner circle of President Putin, about prominent members of Russian elite, including some heads of law enforcement agencies. And of course, it wouldn't end up so loud if he wouldn't, arrange it as a very good investigation documentaries posted on YouTube. And he essentially started to do investigative journalism when this kind of activity was really dangerous for Russian journalists themselves. At the same time, he decided to run for the president, and he was very effective in establishing his headquarters in almost all Russian regions, which is more than 80. And this is, it was before president elections of 2018 in Russia. So that's when Kremlin and Russian pro-Putin elite started to feel him as a real threat. Probably after 2018, it was clear that it's him versus Putin.
And what do we know about Europe's response so far?
We do know that it was already a statement of High Commissioner for Foreign Relations of European Union, Josep Borrell, saying that European Union is concerned about this case, and this case is deplorable, and they expect answers from Russia. And they basically, European Union leadership basically supported what Germany found. But there is no clear understanding what European Union would do. It seems that everybody now gives Russia an opportunity to respond somehow and to start the investigation. That's what, as I see from the statement of Josep Borrell, European Union is insisting on. The most important thing that if the use of Novichok is beyond doubts, it really makes this case for the West very hard not to respond with something really serious. Because as we remember, Russia former spy Sergei Skripal and his daughter Yulia were poisoned in United Kingdom. And consequences were really serious, including those in United States, when more than three dozen of diplomats were expelled and consular sections closed. So, for this case, I believe West will probably respond in the same manner, including that it was very prominent leader of Russian opposition who have been poisoned.
That was Danila Galparovich of VOA's Russia service speaking to me earlier today. The United States on Wednesday announced sanctions against the prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, ICC, Fatou Bensouda. The 59-year-old Bensouda, a Gambian national, had angered the Trump administration by opening an investigation into crimes allegedly committed by American soldiers in Afghanistan. Bensouda's name has been added to the list of sanctioned individuals, the U.S. Treasury Department said Wednesday. During a briefing Wednesday at the State Department, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo announced the sanctions against Bensouda, adding that any individual or entity who materially assisted her also would be subject to sanctions. Here's Pompeo speaking Wednesday.
In June, the Trump administration authorized the imposition of economic sanctions against foreign persons directly engaged in ICC efforts to investigate U.S. or allied personnel and those who materially assisted in that effort. Today we take the next step because the ICC continues to target Americans, sadly. Pursuant to Executive Order 13928, the United States will designate ICC Prosecutor Fatou Bensouda and the ICC's Head of Jurisdiction Complementarian Cooperation Division, Fakiso Mochichuko, for having material assisted Prosecutor Bensouda. Individuals and entities that continue to materially support those individuals risk exposure to sanctions as well. Additionally, State Department has restricted the issuance of visas for certain individuals involved in the ICC's efforts to investigate U.S. personnel.
In June, U.S. President Donald Trump issued an executive order authorizing sanctions against, quote, officials, employees, and agents, as well as members of their immediate families, end quote, working at the ICC. At the time, VOA spoke to Chief Prosecutor Bensouda.
These attacks constitute an escalation and an unacceptable attempt to interfere with the rule of law and the court's judicial proceedings. An attack on the ICC also represents an attack against the interests of victims of atrocity crimes, for many of whom the ICC represents the last hope for justice.
The U.S. is not a signatory to the Rome Statute, which established the ICC, but previous U.S. administrations have been supportive of the court's attempts to bring war crimes suspects to book, including in Congo, Kenya, Sudan, and elsewhere. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson's spokesman says Britain regrets the U.S. measures against ICC officials. A European Union spokesman said the EU will defend the International Criminal Court against attempts to undermine it. UN spokesman Stefan Dujarric noted concern over the U.S. moves.
I can tell you that the Secretary General takes note with concern of today's statement by the United States Secretary of State announcing the designation of the prosecutor of the International Criminal Court and the head of the ICC's jurisdiction complementarity and cooperation division pursuant to the U.S. executive order on blocking property of certain persons associated with the ICC. And that executive order is dated 11 June 2020. We continue to closely follow the developments on this matter. Cooperation between the United Nations and the International Criminal Court is founded on their relationship agreement, which was approved by the General Assembly in September of 2004. We will be analyzing any possible implications that this development may have with respect to the implementation of this relationship agreement. In line with previous statements of the Secretary of State, we trust that any restriction taken against individuals would be implemented consistently with the host country's obligations under the United Nations Headquarters Agreement.
For more on the U.S. actions against the ICC prosecutor, earlier today I spoke to Simon Adams. Adams is the executive director of the Global Center for the Responsibility to Protect in New York. Simon, what's your initial reaction to these sanctions by the U.S.?
I mean, I think it's terrible. I think there's a lot at stake. And I think what's most at stake is the idea that all war crimes are equally abhorrent and illegal, regardless of the nationality of the perpetrator. It's very sad that this is coming from the United States because, you know, from Nuremberg to the founding of the ICC, the U.S. has played a key, you know, if inconsistent role in promoting the idea of international justice, and now it's kind of made itself an enemy of the International Criminal Court.
Now, does the ICC have the legal jurisdiction to investigate the U.S. in Afghanistan?
It does. So it's authorized to investigate what has happened in Afghanistan. And the approach of the court has been, okay, we need to look at all potential atrocities that have been committed in Afghanistan, regardless of the nationality of the perpetrator. That means crimes committed by the Taliban, most obviously, but also by the Afghan government and also by U.S. troops at black sites. The accusations are mainly around torture. The thing is here, if the U.S. wanted to avoid any kind of international scrutiny around this, if it wanted to kind of rebuff the International Criminal Court, the best way of doing so is to make sure that it holds any war criminals accountable in a domestic court. Instead, we have a situation where the President of the United States appears to be willing to pardon and give them a public platform.
There's been a lot of pushback against this. Why do you think there's been such a response to these sanctions?
Because I think people realize, you know, what's going on. This is a retreat into the idea that, you know, war crimes are only war crimes when they're committed by other people. It's a rejection of the ICC, which was, of course, created to prosecute perpetrators of war crimes, genocide, and crimes against humanity, the most serious crimes that can be perpetrated. And so, you know, I think the reaction that we're seeing is in part because people understand that after yesterday's announcement, those who are responsible for war crimes in Syria or for genocide in Myanmar and for other atrocities in other conflict zones in different parts of the world, including on the African continent, all those perpetrators went to bed last night and slept a little more soundly knowing that the U.S. attack on the ICC helps their attempts to evade justice as well.
Now, do you think these sanctions will have an actual impact on the ICC's ability to do its job?
I think it's more about intimidation than about affecting the operational effectiveness of the court. So even back in June when Trump issued his executive order, I think there were already, for example, U.S.-based foundations who fund human rights organizations and support human rights work in different parts of the world, who were reaching out to those organizations and saying, hey, what's your relationship with the ICC? Because, you know, we don't want to be in some kind of conflictual relation, funding relationship that could get us into trouble if there are are any US sanctions. So I think the net effect is the one, which is precisely the one that the US government is intended in this situation, which is to intimidate and is to create a climate of fear, which discourages people from cooperating with the International Criminal Court.
That was Simon Adams, Executive Director of the Global Center for the Responsibility to Protect in New York. You're listening to VOA. Protests broke out Wednesday night in Washington, D.C. after a police officer shot and killed a black man in the U.S. Capitol. The local Black Lives Matter affiliate accused Washington, D.C. police of murdering 18-year-old Dion Kaye. Metropolitan police alleged that Kaye had, quote, brandished a firearm, end quote, at police. The accusations could not be independently confirmed. There were also protests Wednesday night in the city of Rochester, New York, against the death of another black man in police custody. 41-year-old Daniel Prude died of asphyxiation in March after a group of police officers put a hood over his head and pressed his face into the pavement for 2 minutes, according to video and records. Prude's family released video of the incident Wednesday after obtaining it from police. Hurricane Nana made landfall over a relatively sparsely populated stretch of the Central American nation of Belize. Nana pelted the coast with rain and wind, but then weakened into a tropical storm while pushing across Guatemala on Thursday. The U.S. National Hurricane Center says Nana hit lands about 80 kilometers south of Belize City with maximum sustained winds of 120 kilometers per hour. Belize authorities did not immediately report injuries. More than 4,000 people, primarily in the south of the country, moved to government shelters. A prominent British human rights lawyer is convening an independence tribunal in London to investigate whether the Chinese government's alleged rights abuses against Uyghur Muslims constitute genocide or crimes against humanity. The Associated Press reports that the tribunal is expected to reveal new evidence and testimony in public hearings next year. It is the latest attempt to hold China accountable for its treatment of the Uyghur people. Barrister Jeffrey Nice previously led the prosecution of ex-Serbian President Slobodan Milosevic over abuses committed during the Balkans War. The lawyer said that while his tribunal does not have government backing, it is one way to address the alleged abuses by, quote, filling the gap in reliable information, end quote. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Jason Patingan in Washington. Ethiopian officials are demanding an explanation from the U.S. after it announced this week it would cut millions of dollars in aid after Ethiopia began to fill a reservoir at the massive Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam, or GERD, on the Blue Nile River. Egypt, Ethiopia, and Sudan have been locked in a bitter dispute over the dam and sharing of the Nile waters for nearly a decade. Journalist Simon Marks has more from Addis Ababa.
The U.S. State Department on Wednesday announced it would place a temporary pause on tens of millions of dollars in foreign assistance to Ethiopia in response to authorities there filling a reservoir at the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam. Egypt, Ethiopia, and Sudan have been locked in a bitter dispute over the GERD and the waters of the Nile for nearly a decade. The U.S. entered the fray last year and attempted to broker an agreement, only for Ethiopia to step away from those talks due to suspicions over a bias in Washington towards Egypt. Eyob Tekelin, Ethiopia's state finance minister, told VOA that the government has requested the U.S. provide a full explanation for the aid cut. He also said he believed the situation can be resolved quickly.
We don't think the U.S. has thought this through carefully because the partnership between the U.S. and Ethiopia is solid, very strong, and continues to be. So we consider this some misunderstanding. We don't think this will last. We are very hopeful that they would reconsider because Ethiopia is doing what is absolutely right in all sense of the word, legally, morally as well.
In Washington, talks over whether to cut aid to Ethiopia have been going on for weeks. While some State Department officials oppose the move due to the possible diplomatic fallout, others close to the White House and President Donald Trump pushed to make an example of Ethiopia for starting to fill the reservoir without first getting an agreement with Egypt and Sudan. A State Department official told VOA in a statement that the decision to pause assistance for Ethiopia reflects concerns about Ethiopia's unilateral decision to fill the dam before an agreement and all necessary dam safety measures were in place. The official also stipulated the decision was based on guidance from the president and that cuts would not be made to programs tackling HIV/AIDS, conflict, drought, displacement, and other humanitarian challenges. The cuts will impact programs linked to regional security and could amount to roughly $100 million. Rashid Abdi, a senior analyst on Horn of Africa politics, told VOA that the aid suspension may also be tied to Ethiopia's recent crackdown on opposition leaders and supporters following protests that erupted after the death of the popular Oromo singer Hachilu Hundessa.
There is a growing, I think, discontent with Abiy's leadership style, but also the country's authoritarian drift. So this could be a signal to put basically Abiy on notice and to tell him that, look, our strategic relationship could be damaged if you continue down this path.
The next round of discussions between Egypt, Ethiopia and Sudan is scheduled for September 14. Simon Marks for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
A ship carrying 43 crew and nearly 6,000 cattle from New Zealand to China capsized after losing an engine in stormy weather in the East China Sea, the only crew member rescued so far, told Japan's Coast Guard on Thursday. Reuters' Libby Hogan reports.
A massive cargo ship carrying thousands of cattle from New Zealand with 43 crew members has been wrecked in the East China Sea, and only one survivor has been found. The vessel, called the Gulf Livestock 1, is said to have lost an engine and capsized in stormy weather, according to the survivor. The ship sent a distress call from southwestern Japan on Wednesday as Typhoon Misak barreled towards the Korean Peninsula, bringing strong winds and heavy seas. Japan's Coast Guard said it had rescued 45-year-old Serino Edvarodo on Wednesday night, the only crew member rescued so far, who was a chief officer from the Philippines. The ship departed from New Zealand on August 14th with nearly 6,000 cattle, 39 crew members from the Philippines, two from New Zealand and two from Australia. Edvarodo told the Coast Guard he jumped into the water from the boat as it capsized and did not see any other crew members before he was rescued.
Reuters' Libby Hogan had that report. That's it for our show today. Thank you for listening to The Voice of America. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Stay safe, stay healthy, and have a great evening.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
The U.S. Department of State's Diplomatic Security Service, through its Rewards for Justice Office and the Federal Bureau of Investigation, are advertising reward offers of up to $5 million each for information concerning the kidnappings of Mark Randall Frericks and Paul Edwin Overby Jr., who both disappeared in Afghanistan. The RFJ reward offers are for information leading to the location, recovery, and return of Mr. Frericks or Mr. Overby. Paul Overby was last seen in Khost, Afghanistan, near the border with Pakistan, in mid-May of 2014. At the time of his disappearance, he was conducting research for a book he was writing, and it appeared that he planned to cross the border into Pakistan to pursue his work. Mark Frericks was kidnapped in early February 2020. At the time of his kidnapping, he resided in Kabul. He moved to Afghanistan in approximately 2010 and worked on construction projects throughout the country. The Rewards for Justice program is administered by the U.S. Department of State's Diplomatic Security Service. Since its inception in 1984, the program has paid in excess of $150 million to more than 100 people who provided actionable information that helped bring terrorists to justice or prevented acts of international terrorism worldwide. Follow RFJ on Twitter at https://twitter.com/RFJ_USA. If anyone has information about the kidnapping of Mark Frericks or Paul Overby, please contact the Rewards for Justice Office via the website at www.rewardsforjustice.net, email info@rewardsforjustice.net, or contact the regional security officer at the nearest U.S. embassy or consulate. Individuals may also submit information to the FBI at tips.gov. www.fbi.gov. All information will be kept strictly confidential.
That was an international public service announcement by the